Hey, this is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 162 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast. And I'm excited to bring you this one. It's really a great conversation with Carl Felenius from Albert Barbecue in Denver, Colorado. He's doing Central Texas-style barbecue, but with his own twist. But he does have some background and some knowledge into cooking Central Texas-style barbecue because he worked at Franklin Barbecue for over a year. And we get into that. It was interesting because he was in Austin. He was working at a barbecue spot-ish, working the overnight shift, not getting a lot of training nor that much knowledge. He was doing a bunch of other stuff and not really cooking barbecue. And then when he got the job at Franklin, he was a bit overwhelmed. And he talks about how you're dealing with five different fires and keeping the temperature within a certain degree of consistency across the board with those five fires, with those five pits, and the volume that they do. So he has a great background, but when we talk about his menu and what he's done in Denver, it's his own twist and it's his own spin, and things are a little bit different with him, and he loves it, and all of his sides are vegetarian, and he's very conscious of what he's doing and with serving meat and the sides. He wants to give people balanced options. It's really interesting, and if you're listening to this on the podcast, you'll hear his daughter. And then also, if you get a chance, I have a YouTube version of this at youtube.com/kevinsbbqjoints. Make sure you go to that and check that out, because his daughter is super cute, and he's taking care of her while he's doing the interview. So she's jumping in, she's climbing all over his head, she's trying to jump in, it's wonderful. And also you get a chance to really see his soul and how he is and how he treats his daughter and what he cares about and how much he cares about the food that they're putting out. So it's a great balance, and I think you really love that. Albert, you learn how the name Albert came about. It's an interesting name. It's even more interesting with the story, and then his path to getting open in Denver and getting shut down and then getting reopened again and having the doors from one of his pits stolen. It's an interesting story. Carl's such a cool guy. You're going to want to visit when you visit Denver. Thank you, Carl, for taking the time. And if you're digging these, why don't you subscribe? Subscribe to the podcast. If you're just listening to the podcast, there's a YouTube version, which I mentioned. Go to the YouTube side, subscribe to that. I'm putting out at least one or two of these a week with top-notch people like Carl that are really interesting, have interesting stories that I think you'll really want to hear, and I'm excited to share those with you. I have a website at kevinsbbqjoints.com with links to all the podcasts, all the YouTube stuff, lists of pop-ups in Los Angeles, lists of pop-ups and underground spots in Texas, working on those major lists, but with lots of other stuff. So check that out. I'm available on all the social media at kevinsbbqjoints. But at the end, thank you so much. I really appreciate it, and enjoy this. Have a great week.
I'm glad we've got it going. So how are you doing, Carl?
I am doing okay. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. It's hectic, but everything's hectic. Life is always hectic, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
From what I've read about your journey to where you are today, it's been pretty hectic for you too.
It has been crazy. We definitely got put through the ringer. You know, we're cooking live fire barbecue in the middle of Denver, and city wasn't too sure how they felt about that. So
is it kind of similar to what people have to deal with in Los Angeles or maybe even Chicago? Where
absolutely. Luckily, we're in an up and coming neighborhood that is still zoned as an industrial mixed use area.
Huh.
So that's not going to last much longer. But now that we're open, we'll get grandfathered in, hopefully.
Oh, that's nice. That would be really nice. And it's like, I know that I used to travel to Denver a lot for business, and there was Lodo. Lodo had just like kind of become Lodo because it's lower downtown, right?
Absolutely. So we're just a little further north.
Your Reno? Is that what it is? Reno or?
Rhino.
Rhino.
It's weird because Rhino's not a neighborhood. It's a district. It was put together to support local artists.
Okay.
To become an art district. And, you know, usually that's kind of the first step towards gentrification in any neighborhood. Sure. Is the low-income artists move in and start doing cool stuff, and then
a coffee house.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because the person who got me to Denver in the first place is a guy I grew up with who opened a coffee shop in the neighborhood and kind of kicked off the entire gentrification thing. So yeah, Rhino is actually a district that incorporates five different neighborhoods.
Okay.
It's actually kind of become a weird symbol of gentrification to a degree in the area, because it is not a neighborhood. It is a pseudo-governmental district.
Interesting.
It's a good thing in some ways and a bad thing in other ways, but
Is it bad because it's pushing people out?
Yes. Okay. But they are working hard to bring in low-income housing, especially for artists.
Which is because good.
You represent artists primarily. Mm-hmm. And they've been really great to us. And they're not, you know, they're really wonderfully well-meaning people. But if you talk to a lot of the old locals, I think they find it frustrating that suddenly their neighborhood, you know, whether it be Curtis Park or Sunnyside or all different kinds like this, yeah, one of the five different neighborhoods, they seem a little off put that their neighborhood is no longer their neighborhood.
Uh-huh. And it's a tough thing in general, I think, if when you look at it, because it does make the area better, but is it better for them? I guess, yeah, it's kind of.
Yeah, absolutely. And in this situation, it has brought a lot of money and jobs and to an area that was previously very underutilized, and there really wasn't any reason for people to go there unless they lived there already. So
what's the Rye and the No? Is it North? Is No the North?
Yeah, River North.
River North. Okay, yeah, it's new because it's, yeah, it's funny how
where we are, there is no like the river's not even close to where we are. It's an interesting neighborhood, but I like it a lot. It's kind of where we've always been.
Okay.
I have a lot of friends, and the people who work in the neighborhood are amazing. You know, the other business owners and employees at the various businesses are all like really, really great people. And
that's important.
Yeah, I feel really lucky to be a part of their community.
Wait. So there's a million things I want to ask you, but I don't want to forget by asking Owlbear.
Yes. Owlbears are Dungeons and Dragons monsters.
Okay.
Yeah, so they were created by Gary Gygax and his brother, who were the founders and creators of Dungeons and Dragons. They're, yeah, half owl, half bear, and they're known for their voracious appetite for flesh, terrible bad temper, and it just seemed like a fun name that was different. I didn't want to call it Carl's Barbecue. Last name Felenius doesn't really roll off the tongue very easily.
And it's not, and I think it, like 9 people out of 10 could not spell it probably.
Absolutely. So it was just
it's a memorable name for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. A lot of people are very confused by it, which is understandable.
Kind of fun though.
Yeah. That's the idea, was it's fun. I mean, it was
the cool. Confusion's fun too, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's I like that it came from a game that was based on a book that was based on an interpretation of various mythologies, mm-hmm. And it's, you know, that's kind of what we are. We're a barbecue place based on an interpretation of a regional barbecue style, cool. Based on an interpretation of barbecue in general, you know, just based on another tradition and another tradition.
Yeah, all those traditions that laid fit. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
I mean, barbecue today is almost, unless you're going to certain spots in, you know, rural North and South Carolina and, you know, they're all things considered, it's an old cooking style that has been totally changed with modern techniques and mm-hmm. approaches and mentalities, especially the more and more we understand about like the chemistry of cooking and mm-hmm. the science behind everything that we're doing.
As it spreads, like it spreads to places like Rhino. It's like, it's amazing.
From Colorado originally.
Okay.
I learned how to cook in Texas.
Yeah. So were you born in Denver or Boulder or?
It was not. I'm actually from Telluride.
Oh, okay.
Oh, way over on the other side of the state. My parents have been there since 78. They're never leaving.
It's kind of nice there.
You know, it's still a 6.5 to 7.5 hour drive from Denver, but it's a lot closer than Austin. Or before that, I was in New York and Vermont, like all over the Northeast Coast. And
Were you cooking over there or just?
No. I actually don't have a ton of professional cooking experience other than in barbecue. I had a summer job working garmanger in a pretty fancy restaurant in Telluride once.
Okay.
And in college, I delivered Chinese food.
That counts, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I did some like restaurant industry stuff.
You walk into the kitchen.
Absolutely, yeah. But I wasn't like cooking and and studying cooking. And after I lived in New York for a little while, I definitely fell a bit more in love with food in general. I'd always loved food. I've never been a small guy.
I kind of question people that just don't love food. Like, 'cause there's people like, I'm really not a big fan of food. I'm like, it doesn't make any sense.
I totally understand exactly where you're coming from. But I was living, I got into barbecue basically because I liked the idea of it. I mean, I was doing pork butts in my backyard and throwing parties.
In New York?
No, this was more in Texas. And
so did you move to Texas for work?
I moved to Texas from Vermont. I moved all over the place, man. But I actually moved to Texas from Vermont in February. So I went from a raging blizzard to, you know, nice 60, 70 degrees. Yeah. And everyone complaining about how cold it was.
Of course, yes. yeah, these warmer climates. When it's 60, you have to wear jeans and a jacket. It's cold.
Oh, yeah. But no, I moved back and forth from Texas to Colorado one time. I went Texas, Colorado, back to Texas. And then it was on the second trip I fell into a job cooking barbecue at a place called Blue Ox Barbecue.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What was the guy's name?
That was, I'm totally spacing on his name. No.
Hi.
This
hey,
is
what's
my up? Daddy, and she's saying hi.
Hello.
Do you want to be part of Daddy's interview?
Do you like barbecue?
Yeah, you want to sit on my lap?
Apple? Did she say apple?
She said lap.
Oh, lap.
She's not sure how she feels about barbecue. Sometimes.
Hey.
Sometimes she'll just mow down on a bunch of brisket.
Dylan.
Yeah, he's interviewing Daddy. Okay, you going to go watch Peppa? All right, yeah, I love you. Okay, so where were we? I'm sorry about that.
Well, working for Blue Ox. Was that, I want to think it was Chad or Chaz or something?
Chase.
Okay, yeah, Chase.
Worked for Chase. Chase wasn't super involved in Blue Ox. He was doing his own thing, which I understand as an owner and meant now more than I did then, but he really wasn't very present. And he would kind of get his news through other employees. And, you know, it was a strange gig. I was mostly working overnights initially.
And you came in completely green. You had only done pork butts, right?
Yeah, I'd only done pork butts on like a Weber or a water smoker. I really had no experience burning live fires or trimming or rubbing the way you're supposed to rub. And
yeah.
Kind of stuff. So, I mean, I learned a lot, but it was also just, I didn't learn that much. And I thought I was learning a lot, but I realized once I started working at Franklin that I really hadn't learned.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
Yeah, I was working overnights. So I would throw ribs on at a certain time and I would wrap briskets sometimes at a certain time, maybe. There's no real set process.
And coming maybe from where Chase was too.
Funny enough, one of my first employees at Owlbear, when he would mess up, he would be like, dude, why aren't you like freaking out on me? Why aren't you screaming and yelling and throwing stuff at me? What are you talking about, man? Like, that's not who I am or what I love this place. That's how you do it because you're a chef now.
No.
Oh.
That Blue Ox was also like a pancake place or something, right? Or
so they did a weekly brunch on, I think it was Sunday mornings.
Yeah.
Usually I was finishing my shift when they were coming in to get ready for that.
Okay.
So I would sometimes stick around or go home and pick up my my now wife, and we'd go back and get breakfast. But it was... Usually I just spent the whole night, you know, watching the fire, but also like picking up thousands of cigarette butts out of a gravel yard, wiping tables and throwing away trash cans that were way overfilled. And because I'm also the overnight janitor for the Buzzmill.
The coffee place.
Yeah, the coffee place that it was behind. So wiping tables, picking up cigarette butts, throwing out trash. Walking around the outside of the building to clean up stuff.
Did you have time to go to other barbecue places around there to kind of fall in love? Is that how?
I didn't really have any money. I finally had a job, which helped out a ton. But I didn't really have money. I mean, at that point, my wife and I were eating still like a ton of rice and beans and drinking box wine. And in Texas, you can at the Walgreens, they sell a beer called Big Flats. I don't know if they have that in California.
No, I don't know this one.
It's like $3 for a six pack.
Okay.
Drink a bunch of those. It's funny though, because the cans looked kind of fancy. So when friends would come to visit, you just buy a bunch of those and be like, no, this is this great Texas lager. You guys are going to love it.
It's unique to Texas.
And it wasn't a terrible beer, but we were living real, real cheap.
Yeah, yeah.
So not really going out much. And then once I started at Franklin, I was eating barbecue all the time and didn't really want to eat barbecue on the days off. I wish I had. I wish I'd taken the time to really go out and try other places.
How did you score the job at Franklin? Did you know somebody or?
That was actually because of the Buzzmill. One of the owners of the Buzzmill, this guy Travis Kaiser, he owned the coffee roastery that Aaron Franklin had started the food truck in front of.
Okay.
So I technically got fired from Blue Ox, but I got offered my job back 12 hours later, and I got to tell him to take the job and shove it, which
was nice. Felt
really, really good. and then about, right when I got, it was right around Christmas that I got fired. So I came back to Colorado for Christmas, and then I went back to Texas, and I got a call to see if I wanted to interview at Franklin because they needed a cook from Travis. Because, he's a really good guy, and he saw how hard I worked at Blue Ox. I'd stay like an extra hour or two later just to pick up cigarette butts once the sun started coming up.
Yeah, that means a lot.
See what I was doing. So they didn't care as long as I was actually cleaning the place the whole time I was on the clock. So I would do that. Yeah, putting in the extra effort goes a long way.
Oh, for sure.
So he got me an interview with them and vouched for me. And his vouching for me went a really long way with Aaron and Benji, who was the
He was there at the time?
Yeah, he was the GM at the time. And Bron Hughes was the pit master at the time. I can't even begin to express how lucky I am to have gotten to work with Bron and Benji. What
a great little moment in time at Franklin.
In my opinion, Bron Hughes is the best brisket cook in the country, like hands down. I don't think anyone has really taken it quite to the level that he has.
He's like a witch. He's a brisket whisperer.
Bron is just the coolest. And Benji was the best GM I've ever had at any job I've ever done.
Hi.
She's like, this side is a better side.
Yes. Is this the way I should do the interview, little girl? So yeah, I was at Franklin for a while, about a year and a half.
What was that experience like? And I've talked to somebody, one other person that's worked there. What was that like?
I mean, it was amazing. It was also mind-blowing. Going from working one fire with very little, real direction in what I was supposed to do or how I was supposed to do it, to going to a job where the expectation was you're going to manage five fires so well that you barely have 5 degrees of variance in your temperature at all times. Wow. And you are going to also have enough time to step away and do side work and make your sides and get more stuff rubbed and ready to go on. And the first few weeks were really hard for me.
Yeah, was it stressful at first?
Oh, it was so stressful. It was so
stressful to me.
Also, the first week I was there, I split my hand open really bad, splitting wood, splitting some live oak. I mean, it's so knotty. It doesn't usually split right in half like post oak does. And one side just popped straight up into my knuckle and it split it all the way down to the bone. So that was my second day at Franklin. And the day after that, like an idiot after work, I got into our truck. My wife was picking me up. Well, then girlfriend was picking me up from work, and I ate her leftover lunch, which had been sitting in the car for like 4 hours in the middle of the summer in Texas.
Oh, no.
And I got really bad food poisoning and I missed 2 days of work. But all in all, I still went into overtime that week. So,
yeah, that says a lot right there.
It was a really crazy week. They had, they have understandably really high expectations. They have such an amazing reputation to uphold, and you have to maintain quality while you're putting out an extraordinarily high quantity of barbecue. I mean, extraordinarily high is, relative. I mean, there are places that run, Old Hickories and Southern Prides and those big offset or those big assisters. Yeah, the Oilers and stuff that can put out way more food than that. But without really the attention to detail, the labor, basically. And in the end, that's the secret ingredient to cooking great barbecue is hard work and labor and...
Yeah, detail and being detail-minded, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a guy here, Wayne Smoke Shack. He smokes on pellet smokers, But man, he works the hell out of those pellet smokers and comes out with an amazing product.
And that's like, and I think that that's the a kind of a misnomer. People think that you need an offset, you need something special to do. You can do a, you could do great pro. It all depends on what you, if you know your device that you're cooking on really well.
Yeah, and I mean, at least a pellet smoker is almost always 100% wood fueled.
True.
You're not gonna get any residual gas flavor. You're not going to have smoldering wood that's throwing creosote onto the meat and creating off flavors and, you know, undesirable effects.
So do they, when do they talk you, like, did Braun talk you through a lot of things? Like, is that, how does that work?
So, I mean, when I started, I was trained by two guys, Andy Morris and Andy Reisner.
Oh, yeah.
Andy Reisner is now the pit master at Franklin.
Yeah.
And Andy Morris ran the smoking program at Komori Tatsuya for a while. He helped me open Owlbear,
okay.
And now he works with Braun and Inkle Sinclair at Style Switch and Lance Kirkpatrick.
Yeah.
And they're, man, what a dream team, those three guys. Yeah, well, so my wife used to work for Todd Duplichant at Lenoir,
okay.
Who is a partner in the Switch as well.
Gotcha.
That guy is a genius. Coolest, nicest people in the world. He was like really hugely influential to me in how I wanted to approach running a kitchen and being a restaurant opener or owner. He's just a kind person who has high expectations, but isn't going to be an asshole about it. You know, isn't going to demean his employees. And I always thought that was really cool.
Do you kind of feel like that day and age is over, sort of? Like, I think I'm sure it exists in some
respect. I don't think that will ever be truly over as long as people are kind of just mean to each other. I think the world is becoming a better place all the time. You know, it doesn't seem like it maybe sometimes when you're looking at the news headlines.
Yeah, if you look at it, it's awful.
But at the same time, people are more accepting and kind, and there's, you know, less violent crime than at any point in history. Yeah, I think things really are getting better in the world, and that will definitely translate into how people are treated at their jobs. And I mean, it's such a dude club, man. It's such a, especially barbecue too. Like, I mean, a lot of barbecue guys are really nice, but it's just such a bro club.
It kind of is.
Ladies cooking barbecue. I think there should be more, absolutely. Uh-huh. I mean, it's hard though sometimes. Like, I worry about hiring girl cooks because there's a lot of weird hours where we are. And we're right in a big drinking neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want them out. Like, I don't want the liability of having a girl working by herself at 3 a.m. In an area where there's not only drunk bros and assholes, you know, everywhere, but also, and, you know, that might be sexist to a degree, but it definitely prevents, it makes me worry when I think about hiring girls to cook.
That's an honest statement.
No, but it, you know, barbecue is a strange world in a lot of ways. I love it, but you know, I feel like one of the hardest things for me doing barbecue is just the sheer amount of death that's involved. Like, we are almost like priests, like sacrificial meat priests, of olden times.
When I think about, like, when I see, like, I think of a lot when I see a commercial for something like chicken slider, like something on for chicken, I think about how many chickens are killed and how many cows. Like, that's when I start to think about it in that respect.
I mean, we go through about 80 to 90 briskets a week. And technically that's 40 to 45 cows worth of briskets.
Yeah.
A week. And that's crazy to think about. But, you know, I'm really proud that we're able to, you know, source meat that is sustainably raised
That's
and
important.
Mainly slaughtered all, you know, across the board, our pork, our beef. We don't do a ton of chicken. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to start doing turkey.
Do you make your own sausage?
We're trying to get that together. I don't have a freezer and
that's important.
Yeah. So we have a very small restaurant. It's only 18 seats. We don't even have a walk-in. We don't have a freezer. So we're doing what we can with what we have. My friend Justin Brunson is going to start hopefully making custom sausages for us as soon as the USDA lets him out of his new facility with River Bear meats and bacon, and they make amazing bacon and summer sausages and deli meats and stuff like that. It's his new project. But
is River Bear another Dungeons and Dragons creation? Or
knowing Justin, it's probably a reference to some sort of Grateful Dead song or something.
Probably. For a split second, I thought Owlbear might be like a Dave Matthews, like dancing bear thing or something.
Well, here's one of our shirts. It's really like...
That's rad.
We do a lot of... I mean, really, we listen to metal and we play nerd games and weird hippie nerd, like hippie-ish, weird pot-smoking nerd, metalhead nerds. I don't know.
That make great barbecue. That's awesome. I think that's a perfect combination.
We just try and do it right.
Well, so how did you, from Franklin, when you were working there, were you thinking, I want to go back to Denver with this? Is like, how did that transition back to?
So I definitely thought about that a number of times. Denver didn't, you know, it's never been known really for its barbecue scene. Yeah. It's not saying that Denver's never had a barbecue scene. It's just never really been what it's been known for. It's much more
steaks
and burgers, and green chili is the big one. Mm-hmm. I think the single most Denver food I can think of is, it's called a Mexican hamburger, but it's a cheeseburger
wrapped
in tortilla smothered in green chili. And it's really yummy.
Sounds really good.
It's like night drinking food ever. It'll give you crazy heartburn. And you get put like they put some refried beans in there and stuff too. But it's super yummy. It's very old Denver. Mm-hmm. And I like that about it. But yeah. Denver's food scene is, you know, really improving very rapidly. It's a really great town.
It makes sense because it is such a great town, and it's a lot of people are moving there too, so you would think that it would start to really explode.
Denver's the most interesting place I've ever lived. It truly is. More than anywhere else I've ever been, a crossroads of America. I mean, the biggest highways in the country come through Denver. The biggest train lines in the country come through Denver. It's right in the middle. It's where the Midwest meets the Rockies. It's where the West almost begins.
True.
In a way. It's a weird hodgepodge of all of those cultures. I mean, all the primary transplants into Denver mostly coming from Texas and Kansas and Illinois, and we get a lot of California too.
Californians, I thought there's a lot, like 15,000.
There's a lot of Californians. There's a lot of Southerners, you know, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi.
But it makes sense that they would want food that they were familiar with.
Yes, and, you know, we, in a lot of ways, we are a Texas barbecue restaurant, but in a lot of ways, we aren't. You know, it's kind of one of the reasons I did like the idea of opening up not in Texas was that we weren't no longer beholden to the expectations of a Texas barbecue restaurant to be whatever the heck we wanted to be.
How are you different? What kind of sets you apart?
So, I mean, our rub's a little bit different on everything. Like all of our rubs are a little different. Mm-hmm. I guess the most traditional thing we do is almost more of a North Carolina, like Piedmont pork shoulder with vinegar pepper sauce.
Sounds good.
Our brisket isn't just salt and pepper. We are very open about the fact that we slather just about everything we cook in mustard.
Okay.
Before we cook it. The only exceptions to that are the pork shoulder and the pork tenderloin.
Why did you go that route?
Well, I just think it gives you a better product in the end. Mm. You know, our rubs are a little bit more interesting. Some of the stuff, flavors come through. Some of them don't quite as much. You know, our ribs, they're dry rub ribs. We don't sauce them at all. But, you know, then we have two barbecue sauces right now. One is definitely more of a Central Texas barbecue sauce. I just added another one, though, that's like, I call it breakfast sauce. It's like a diner breakfast barbecue sauce. It's really different, but
almost like an A1 almost, or like a Heinz 57 or a...
Like it's Heinz is the base. But then it has coffee and pancake syrup for sugar. Like, I was like, I'm not paying $50 for a gallon of maple syrup. That's crazy. I'm giving this sauce away. And also it's barbecue. We're not trying to do something that's super fancy and high end. And, you know, so why not do, something that tastes like breakfast in a diner that you can dip your brisket into and have it all kind of come together nicely.
I love that. Now, did you open a food truck first? Is that how the route that you
did? We I wouldn't call it really a truck. What's wrong, darling? Okay, I've got to talk for a little bit longer. Okay,
we're heading to the second half of the story.
She's gonna be back from work soon. I love you. Yeah. So it wasn't really quite a food truck. We somehow managed to get our smoker, which was on a trailer. We put a hand sink with a hot water heater, and we the guy who helped me build my first smoker modified a keg so that it could be filled with water and then pressurized with a bike pump. and so we had that on the trailer. They made sure that we had hot water, and they passed us as a food truck, even though we didn't really have any way to sell food that would have been up to food handling code.
Okay.
At this point, even with that setup. So I took the back of an old box truck and I built it out to serve food out of that. But technically that didn't really work with zoning code or code or fire code. We just kind of couldn't figure out how to open up at all initially. So we worked some loopholes and just kind of did it. And it took them a year and a half to find us. And then they found us and were like, this is not even kind of okay. What are you thinking? You've been waiting for us to show up, haven't you? I've totally been waiting for you guys to show up. And the city shut us down. Luckily, we had a lot of good success with the food truck. We'd gotten best barbecue in Colorado. Our first year open, we got like second best new restaurant in Denver from Dining Out Denver. I mean, there's so many different people who hand out all these awards.
there's never enough.
Objective and inane, but they're helpful things.
Were your pits from Texas?
No. So when I left Texas, I picked up a trailer in Manor, and then I picked up propane tanks in Oklahoma, and then I got to Denver and found some welders to help me out with stuff.
Well, that's cool.
And because I'm not much of a welder. Can use an angle grinder pretty well, but I'm definitely not a welder. I'd like to learn. I just don't really.
It's an interesting skill set to have.
Absolutely. Anyways, we got pit made. We built out the container, and we opened up with this bar called Finn's Manor that has like a bunch of food trucks outside. And that was a friend of mine who I grew up with. Who was one of the owners of that place. And that's one of the reasons I knew about it and had the opportunity to move up here and participate in opening there. Yeah, we had a really good first year and a half. I mean, honestly, I'm still paying off that first winter. We were outside in the winter in Colorado. And so that's rough. Yeah. But
it's no joke.
We managed to make it work somehow.
So you got shut down. Then how long did it take you guys to...
It took us about 2 years to get back open. It took us over a year to even get construction permits from the city. From when we closed to when it was 4 months until we took we found the place. We got the place that we were opening the restaurant in, and then another month to get plans submitted, and then about 13 months just to get our construction permits. And then another 8 or 9 months of construction. I mean, we had to put in another bathroom, run grease lines everywhere, put in a grease trap, fix all the electric, fix all the HVAC. It was a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Best job of hiring some of my subcontractors. I had some really good ones. Most everything went pretty well, but there was just some minor hiccups here and there.
When did you officially open again?
We officially reopened in May.
May. Are people excited to have you guys back?
I mean, it had become an interesting thing. Some people, there was a lot of speculation as to why it took so long. There was a lot of people during that time. We built a second smoker. And as soon as that smoker was built, someone came through in the middle of the night one night with an ankle grinder and cut off the doors of our new smoker.
Jeez. Oh,
please don't press any buttons. Don't press any buttons.
Who do you think this was?
I have no idea. I mean, I have plenty of ideas, but I'm not sure enough that I ever really say, hey, this is the guy who did this. I just don't have enough proof. And we have video of it, but the license plates are like something is taped over them. Their faces were covered. I don't know who took our smokers or why they took our or the doors or why they took the doors.
They stole the doors?
They just stole the doors. They didn't.
So weird.
They scrap. I had a ton of scrap laying around. You know, some people have come to me and said, hey, I'm pretty much sure it was this guy, or I'm pretty much sure it was that guy, and this is why. I don't think it was vegans. They would have spray painted the wall too, or spray painted something.
Yeah.
I don't think it was scrappers, because they didn't touch any of the actual scrap that was way more valuable, that was just laying around and didn't require any extra work. I think it was someone just trying to make my smoker not work.
Yeah.
And they only did one. So I think it was someone who didn't want to ruin anything for me, but wanted to just kind of cause me some problems.
Mm-hmm.
Throw a wrench into the works for a little bit. It doesn't really matter anymore. Fixing the doors was a complete nightmare. You know, they're made out of the propane tank, those doors. So trying to fabricate steel to
fit that curve and
fit the curve and all of the imperfections.
Of course.
So the first guy who fixed it only kind of fixed it. And then my friend Caleb, who is a wizard, he's a steel wizard. He came in and he actually ran beads on the inside of the door to warp it as it cooled so it fit into place just right.
Wow, that's so smart.
He cut it here and cut it there and then re-weld it and warp it again. And he got the whole thing to fit almost like new.
So when you opened in May, were there people that were waiting, the barbecue people? Were they excited that you were back?
They were very excited.
What were your hours to begin with? And then are they the same hours right now? What are your hours right now?
Hours right now are Thursday through Sunday, 11 a.m. sold out. I mean, I'm still working 6 days a week to be open 4 days a week until I can get my staff trained up a little bit better, have a little bit more staff. It'll be hard to add those other days, but the goal is to be open Tuesday through Sunday, 11 a.m. to sold out.
Is there a line ahead of time?
Not always. Okay. Some days, some days no. It seems like the days where we have the crazy lines almost tend to discourage people from coming back later in the week. Like they walk by and they see the line and they're like, oh, I don't need to do that. That looks... That doesn't look so fun. I don't care how good the food is.
Yeah, there's those people. There's always those people.
It's always, you know, it's been really great. It's been a little up and down and hit or miss, but mostly we've been super busy selling a lot of food. We're definitely selling more than double what we were selling at the food truck, which is awesome. Most days, at least. Yeah, some days we're selling about the same amount, but...
What proteins and what sides?
We're doing brisket, pulled pork, pork belly, pork ribs, pork tenderloin. And then, so lots of pork, a little bit of beef.
Mm-hmm.
We do some specials. We do a pulled duck special. Oh. It's really popular.
Wow. Sounds great.
And then we do, two different kinds of mac and cheese, pinto salad, potato salad, or pinto beans, potato salad, coleslaw. And that's about it right now. We do sandwiches. We're trying to add some more stuff, but I don't want to drive my cooks totally insane.
It doesn't make sense to...
No, I'm going to add another side or two, I think. Stuff that we can cook in bulk, cool properly, and then reheat throughout the week instead of trying to do the same. I mean, honestly, I don't think we'll be able to. We're going through enough sides that we can't even keep up with what we're already doing to a degree.
You'll have sausage too, then eventually too.
I got the cucumber salad.
Oh.
Which is something new that I came up with. We're doing what we can with what we have. I want to add sausage to the menu permanently. I would like to make it myself once I can afford the equipment. I need to get a grinder. Like, I have a stuffer. I need a grinder and a freezer.
Did you make sausage at Franklin?
No, we never were made. When I was there, we did not make our own sausage.
Okay.
He was getting it from the Austin Sausage Company.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Oh, man, they make such good sausage. Yeah. And they're super talented guys.
Don't they use, not blood, or say, use something in there, right?
Yeah, it's nice. It adds good lean texture and a little bit of minerality.
That's minerality.
Yeah, without, you know, adding cost. I don't think anyone's really doing too much blood. I would love to do blood sausage on this.
I love blood sausage.
Me too. I want to, at some point, I really, really, really want to do an American full English.
breakfast.
Would you do an American style version?
Yeah, I would basically use like my bean recipe that I already use, and you know, if we do smoked mushrooms and smoked jackfruit. All of our sides are vegetarian.
Nice.
So we're trying to be as vegan and vegetarian friendly as we can.
That's smart where you are too. It makes sense.
But even beyond that, like just trying to get meat eaters to eat a little bit less meat once in a while. Not all the time, just like sometimes, you know. Mm-hmm. We don't need to eat meat every day, do we?
So what was it like to have Daniel come by?
That was great. It was also super stressful. I knew he was coming through, and I knew there was also a podcast who was coming through to do a little podcast recording. What I didn't realize was that the podcasters and Daniel Vaughn were going to be there together, and that they were going to do a big interview outside of the restaurant.
I didn't know that.
They were also going to pull me in too. They actually just released it today. The podcast is called, I think it, so it's these guys, I think it was either No Vacancy Colorado or Stoned Appetite. Those are the guys, two different things.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure it was Stoned Appetite. So it was two stoned Southern boys and Vaughn. And it was pretty amusing, but it was also like, I think he told them they could have half an hour to 45 minutes, and they ended up taking up 2 hours of his time.
Ugh.
Well, as long as it doesn't reflect poorly on me, they're really nice guys. Like all of them are super nice. I'd met Daniel before when I worked in
sure. As he was touring around, I was thinking, when's he going to Owlbear? And then finally, I'm like, okay, he finally went.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised we were one of his last stops, mm-hmm. but so super thankful, because the day that he got into town, our warmer messed up and got way too hot and way too humid. And the food was good, but it wasn't nearly as good as I wanted it to be. And of course, even the day where he came in, the briskets that we were started off with for some reason were a little bit overcooked and mushy. And then the briskets that we got to, like as soon as he left, were perfect. But yeah, he was stoked. Everyone seems really excited with our pork belly. That kind of seems to be what's standing out to at least the people from Texas. They're saying our brisket's great and our ribs are great, but that the pork belly is what they're super surprised and
it looks beautiful from what I've seen.
Thank you. Yeah, we do it a little bit different. You know, we don't do the burn ends. We don't cook it the whole belly and then make those big thick or those big bacon slices that are super long. And we cut it so that they're long, thin strips of meat that cook a lot more evenly. They almost look like slices of lean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love it. It's so rich, but it's so tasty. It's the only meat that I really bring home and eat a ton of at this point.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Does she like it?
Loves it. She loves that and the brisket. I don't think she knows what to do about ribs. I think the bones freak her out a little bit. Mac and cheese. Kind of likes the beans. She's kind of picky. She mostly, just wants to eat like yogurt and mac and cheese and goldfish.
You know, and you know what's funny is that'll keep someone alive. Like, it's funny how like you'll see what kids eat and you're like, that keeps you alive, I guess.
I guess it does. Yeah.
Probably not for 75 years of it, but
no.
I want this picture. This is the picture I'm going to use for the thumbnail.
That's totally fine.
That's hilarious. I might. I'm thinking about it, but at least I'll use it to promote. Did we miss anything? Do you think that you'll get something covered for, you won't have it for winter, this winter, but do you think?
Like getting the smokers covered?
Are you covered? Like, do you have any kind of covering at all?
We don't yet. I am talking to an architect and some engineers to get that built as soon as possible.
Yeah.
It's really just a money issue.
Yeah.
You know, we went through so much stupid stuff with our build out that I guess I'm not supposed to speak anymore. Yeah, it was expensive. And so we're making money and we're getting where we need to be. It is very it's going to cost a bunch of money to put up a roof.
Yeah.
Just even paying the the architect and the engineer who the city will require for us to.
Yeah, that's not cheap at all.
Drawn by. So I'm sure that I can figure out getting it put up and installed for a decent amount of money. But the other stuff is what I'm
that's true. That's true.
We're almost there, though. I think we should have we kind of need a covering by winter. And then I can also put a warmer under there, and I can put In the summer, I can put misters under there. And
it'll be nice for summer, too. It'll be really nice.
Oh, it'll be really nice for summer. The thing in Colorado is, you know, it might be 90 degrees, but in the shade, it feels like 80, and in the sun, it feels like 150.
Because the sun shines really bright on Colorado.
Right, yeah.
It does. No, when I was in Colorado, I always felt like it was hotter than
Yes, the sun here, and it'll burn you so fast. Yeah,
I know all about that. Well, Carl, thank you. I really want to talk to you for a million reasons, but I want to talk to you because I like the fact that you're doing really good barbecue in Denver. I think that's important because there wasn't – when I visited, there never was.
No, and there's a lot of people who are doing a much better job.
I agree.
It's Denver's really – you know, it's getting the barbecue scene that it deserves. The hardest thing about Colorado that I've noticed so far is just that we have a ton of great firewood and absolutely no one will turn it into firewood. Everyone is chipping it. I don't know why. It's oak. It's amazing. It tastes so good. It burns so nicely. And everyone, for some reason, everyone's decided that they'd rather chip in firewood from Missouri or Texas. And it,
bizarre.
Like, I can't wrap my head around it. And it's driving me crazy. I mean, I've asked a ton of different wood companies to just be on the lookout, even just to broker a deal so I get like 10 plus cords.
I wonder why.
I don't know.
It's probably, it's because of the airport. What's underneath your airport? There's something going on.
But it's, yeah, there's the, Colorado just doesn't have that mentality for some reason.
So weird. Maybe it'll change. Maybe that's something that'll be a shift or something.
I'm trying to kind of help out with is I want people to realize that.
We can go on, but I think that people, I think that people really have gotten a sense of who you are and where you come from and what you're trying to serve. And I think that's, this is important. I think it's really good. I'm happy we got a chance to speak. And you also got a chance to find out that you're a good father and that you have a daughter that wants to spend time with you.
I love hanging out with my daughter. That was the only upside to getting shut down when we did, because my daughter was born 2 months later. And I got to spend a ton of time with her while we were waiting on permits and waiting on all kinds of stuff. And I got to really get to know my daughter at that young age in a way that a lot of dads don't really have the opportunity to. Not because they don't want to, but because they have responsibilities. And I, you know, made me feel like a bum because I didn't have a job at the time. Luckily, she has the coolest mom in the world who has helped us survive through these tough times and, you know, supported us in getting Owlbear open. I couldn't have done it without her. It looks like it's time for me to take her.
That's the shut it down right now. Well, Carl, have a great week.
Hey, it was really nice to meet you, Kevin.
So nice to meet you. I can't wait. I'll be out to Denver in three or four months or so.
All right. Well, I'll be here. So I hope to see you.
I'll reach out ahead of time. We'll hang out.
Oh, please do. I really enjoyed talking to you.
I really enjoyed too. I think we're very similar. We have this similar sentiment in life. I think we're kindred spirits. Well, have a good one.
I agree. Hey, have a great one, Kevin.
All right. Thanks so much. All right. Bye. Bye.